This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area's talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
Welcome to KCBS In-Depth. I'm Matt Bigler. In the wake of the LA firestorm, many of us have been asking, what can I do to better protect my home or business from wildfire? This week, we are putting that question to one of the top experts in that field, Battalion Chief Todd Lando. He's a wildfire mitigation specialist for the Central Marin Fire Department. He's also president of Fire Safe Marin, the very first fire safe council in the nation. Let's start with a little background. Give us the history of majorly destructive wildfires in California.
1961, the Bel Air fire in Los Angeles burned areas that reburned during the Palisades fire. That was the fire that really triggered a significant change and evolution in our understanding of wildfires in California. It was the event that prompted the enactment of some of the first laws related to wildfire defensible space, wildfire building codes. It changed the way we approach fires from the fire service, the way we suppress fires, the organization structure, how we command and control wildfires, all changed because of what happened in 1961 in Los Angeles. That said, the history of wildfires in California certainly isn't centered in Southern California. The entire state has always been impacted by wildfires, and that's why we have, you know, what's arguably the best wildland fire fighting force in the nation here in California.
What keeps you up at night?
I'm concerned right now about inaction by property owners in California in this belief that the problem is somebody else's to solve. This sounds like I might be blaming property owners, but I really believe there's a significant gap in understanding between what we in the fire service and the fire science community know that can be done to reduce the risk at the individual property level and what property owners believe. Oh, we see a lot of people throwing their hands up thinking that they can't make a change on their own property, either because their neighbor, in their opinion, isn't doing enough, or they feel that it's somebody else's job to put these fires out, or they fear that there's some sort of political failure that led to these fires. And that's really a significant issue we're facing right now. Capturing people, helping them understand that they are in absolute control of whether or not their home burns during a wildfire. It may require significant investment, but individual property owners can make a decision to either allow their home to burn or not.
What is the government doing to help neighbors work together to harden their homes and their whole communities against wildfire?
There's a national program administered by the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA. It's called the FireWise USA program. And it's an organization structure that helps neighbors work together to reduce risk at the community level. So you're talking multiple homes, between 800 and 500 or 1,000 plus homes. Wow. In some cases, working together. Think neighborhood scale, where all of the property owners get together, they work on developing a better understanding of what the risk is in the community, and they work on projects to reduce the risk around their home. To receive that FireWise designation means that the community's organized and they're working towards the goal of reducing their wildfire risk, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that neighborhood is any safer. They have to actually implement these mm-hmm. things to make it safer. So you can get the plaque and the recognition that you are working together today, even if the risk has not significantly reduced. And I think there is some gap in understanding about that. Mm-hmm. There are other benefits to it. The insurance industry recognizes that when these communities work together, they can reduce their risk, and they provide, in many cases, benefits, sometimes reduced insurance premiums, sometimes better retention of policies. It really helps neighborhoods come together. Mm-hmm. But that certainly is not the be-all, end-all. That's one important step that we really believe in here in Marin County. But you still need to continue working. And this is not the kind of thing where you do some work on your property, you high-five, and you're done. You have to do it again next year.
Right, because the weeds keep growing
back, and properties age, and they need continued maintenance to maintain their wildfire resistance if they had it to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Now, historically, there haven't been many contractors offering home hardening services. Is that starting to change?
It is changing in the wake of the LA fires, in that there's a renewed interest. And, I will say that the interest out of Los Angeles that we're seeing here in the Bay Area is significantly greater than when we were losing homes in our own backyards mm-hmm. a few years ago. Mm-hmm. There's more interest today from what people saw happen in LA than there was when it was happening in Santa Rosa, walking distance mm-hmm. from here. I can't explain that, but we're willing to accept that that's just the case, and I want to take advantage of people's interest in this right now because it works. So, yes, hiring a contractor is one way that you can commit to some of these retrofits that can make your home significantly safer. There are contractors who specialize in wildfire-resistant retrofitting, things like the vents, siding, gutter covers on roofs, and a number of other factors that we know make homes more vulnerable. But importantly, more important than the LA fires in a lot of ways, are that California adopted in 2008 the Chapter 7A of our building code, which is the most stringent wildfire-related building code in the nation. And it's a fantastic building code. It really is. If you build a home to the letter of the law to meet the current wildfire urban interface building code in California, that home in all likelihood is going to survive a wildfire. Mm-hmm. It still requires maintenance of vegetation and defensible space around the home. It requires some consideration for what we're now calling Zone Zero, that I hope we get mm-hmm. to talk about. But if you've done these things, your home in all likelihood would have survived even these catastrophic fires like the Palisades Fire or the Camp Fire in Paradise. Mm.
What about DIY homeowners? What can they do to protect their properties on their own?
So, I'll start in some ways with the easiest ones to retrofit. And we talk about retrofitting here in Marin County because we're a very low growth county. We're only seeing, a very slow incremental growth in building of new construction. So what we look at here are remodels and retrofitting mm-hmm. of existing buildings, virtually none of which were built to this standard. The easiest low-hanging fruit for retrofitting is oftentimes retrofitting vents. Homes require airflow through crawl spaces underneath them, through their attic spaces. It reduces moisture buildup in the structure, keeps you from getting dry rot and other, mold and other things that affect homes. But while we've understood that for centuries, that homes needed to breathe, needed airflow, the airflow through these vents also tended to allow embers into those spaces, confined spaces like an attic or a crawl space, a basement, mm-hmm. when a wildfire is burning nearby. And wildfires generate millions and millions of these tiny embers that can blow into these enclosed spaces. When they accumulate, like we've seen them do over and over again, those embers build up enough heat that they can ignite the house from the the inside out. So retrofitting vents requires using screening on your vents that's small enough to prevent those embers from reaching the interior space.
Is that the 16th inch?
16th of an inch is what we recommend now. The state law allows, and science shows that an eighth of an inch is probably about right to stop most embers from entering. We think a 16th of an inch is better. There are building considerations, though. You need that airflow, and using smaller mesh reduces the amount of airflow. So you do need to consider speaking to a professional to help you understand if you reduce the size of the openings on those vents, you may need to add additional vents to allow for enough airflow to keep moisture from being a problem. So there is some complexity to it, but it can do a tremendous job of reducing the impact during a fire of embers igniting a home from the inside. There are more modern vents. In fact, they're required on new construction on California and the Wildland-Urban Interface. There are several manufacturers that make them, approved by the state fire marshal, and these will actually prevent flames from getting into those vents. Ideally, your structure would never be impacted by flames from the outside if you've maintained good defensible space and a good zone zero. Those vents should never see any flames, but right now, many houses do, and for a variety of reasons, we think that those flame and ember-resistant vents are the best possible option. They can be a little trickier to retrofit, although it can be done on almost all homes.
Aren't there some that close up?
Yes, these are the ones that close up.
Okay.
So virtually all of them now use some type of a mechanism, an intumescent foam inside of them that expands when it's exposed to heat. That prevents flames, smoke, and heat even from entering that space, and they're extremely effective.
How important is covering those attic and basement vents with finer mesh screens to keep out embers?
Vent alone, retrofitting your vents, you may get lucky, and that may be what it takes to prevent your house from burning, but it really shouldn't be seen as the end. You still need to do a lot of other things. So while your vents are important, roofing has always been critical. We've understood that for a century, that wood shake roofing is very vulnerable to ignition from embers. In most of California, we haven't seen new wood shake roofs, wood shingle roofs installed in the last 30 years. The Oakland Hills fire really ended that in the Bay Area. But wood shingle roofs sometimes last 70 or more years, so there are still a few out there. That said, most of the homes have an ignition-resistant roof, what we call a Class A roof. It resists a lot of fire on that roof. But you still need to keep them clean. There are places on a roof that are vulnerable, like where there's a dormer, where a vertical wall attaches to the roof. Leaf litter and things and embers can build up there and ignite that as though it were a regular wall. So if you have wood shingles on your siding, which is still allowed, on a dormer on your roof, you may be in just as much danger as if you had a wood shingled roof. So maintaining a clean roof is critically important. Understanding the importance of those junctions where a vertical wall hits your roof is really important. And then keeping material out of your rain gutters. I can't tell you, early on in my career at the Oakland Hills fire, I saw dozens, if not hundreds, of homes ignite from their rain gutters. And when you have enough heat buildup in those rain gutters, it can damage the roofing. The rain gutters themselves can fall off and expose fascia that ignites. Mm-hmm. So keeping a clean rain gutter is critical. Not allowing leaf litter to build up, and because of that, what we really strongly recommend are fine stainless steel mesh screening for your rain gutters. We don't want to see any vinyl or plastic rain gutters. Vinyl or plastic gutter guards are not okay. We want to see a fine stainless steel mesh that keeps material from building up inside those gutters. It makes it easier to clean your roof and keep it clean during the fall when leaves are falling.
I'll keep that in mind because that's something I've thought about. And most of the products that you see advertised, I think, are plastic.
Most are plastic, including some that we've seen some manufacturers of a foam rubber product that's cheap and inexpensive and easy to install, and it's got an advertisement that says that it's flame resistant, but in our informal tests here at the fire department and with FireSafe Marin, we take a match to it and it ignites readily and easily and it burns like gasoline. So we're very skeptical of that. They're not rated or approved by anybody in California, and we think that some of that advertising might be misleading.
Doesn't sound very fire resistant to me.
No, it's not. Yeah, not in our experience. One of the challenges is there are some wood shingles that are treated with a material that allows them to pass the test for the state of California. I think they're not very common, But you know, what we see and the science is showing us is that those treatments wear off much faster than the treatments on an asphalt shingle. An asphalt shingle still requires an aggregate, it's almost like a stone or sand base to it that provides most of its fire resistant, but it will last 50 years, whereas we do not believe that the treatments on those wood shingles will last that long. I know there are people in the wood products industry that are going to wring their hands and punch the wall when they hear me say that, but it's true. We're not seeing the treatments last as long as the claims, and we don't think it's the best product.
One of the terms that we're hearing a lot now is Zone Zero for wildfire safe landscaping. What is Zone Zero?
Yeah, so Zone Zero, it is coming down the pipe in a regulatory sense, but it's a concept that we've understood for quite a while, and the science has continued to pile on our understanding of where homes ignite during wildfires. In about one of the first studies that really looked deeply at this came out of the Witch Fire in Southern California more than a decade ago, and what they found was about 60% to 90% of the homes that burned because of things that ignited within 5 feet of the structure, not because of your neighbor's home. 60% to 90% were because of things that ignited within 5 feet of the building itself, or embers that landed on the building itself. So that tells you that you can reduce 60% to 90% of your risk without ever being concerned about your neighbor's house. This 5 foot zone around your house, picture an area that extends 5 feet from the base of your walls out, and this really should include the walls and anything that's attached to the home, like an arbor or trellis or a deck. That area needs to be completely non-combustible. Nothing that'll burn. That doesn't mean you can't have anything there. It means you can't have anything that will burn there. If you have, patio furniture within 5 feet of your structure, it should be aluminum patio furniture, not wicker furniture, for example. Your doormat should be a heavy rubber or steel doormat rather than a jute fiber doormat, because jute fiber is combustible, it burns. You shouldn't have any mulches within 5 feet of your house. Wood mulch, really common to see the gorilla hair shredded redwood bark or just bark mulch. It looks nice, it helps hold moisture in the ground. It's good for plants in the ground because it holds moisture in, it keeps the ground from drying out, it's permeable to allow moisture to run off during rain events close to your house. But it creates a significant problem in that it's extremely combustible. Embers land in it, it ignites, it impacts your home with small flames, but those little tiny flames are likely to ignite the siding or the underside of your house.
Even if it's redwood.
Especially if it's redwood, yeah. So what we want to see within 5 feet is no combustible mulches used at all. No bark, no wood chips, nothing like that.
Just
we
dirt.
Want to see, well, most people don't want to see just dirt. So within 5 feet of your house, these are my recommendations. If you're retrofitting your house and you have combustible bark mulch right there, what you ought to replace it with is a decorative gravel mulch. And there you go to a stone supply place and you can find decorative gravel in all kinds of shapes and colors and sizes. It's going to last a lot longer than the bark. It provides the same moisture retention and permeability. And it's completely non-combustible. It will not burn. You can hit it with a leaf blower in the fall and it won't blow the mulch away because it's heavy stone, but you can blow the leaves out of it, which can improve its fire resistance. It's a great product and it's really what we ought to see. There are lots of homes that traditionally had a concrete path around the house, a concrete pad all the way around the house. In that case, you already have a non-combustible Zone Zero. Decomposed granite, which is compacted, makes nice pathways. It's a fantastic choice that isn't just bare dirt. So there are lots of options that aren't just bare dirt. That said, bare dirt is an option. It's just not the prettiest, and it can create a mud problem in the winter.
And the weeds like to grow in it.
And the weeds are a significant problem. Come springtime here, you absolutely can't have any, weeds, grasses, dead vegetation, and this is where it really gets complicated for people and emotional. We don't want to see any vegetation at all wall within 5 feet of a structure. And we know that most houses were built by architects who envisioned having a boxwood hedge around the base of the wall. That was a great idea aesthetically. It was a terrible idea from a wildfire standpoint. And now we're having an insurance crisis in California. We've seen almost 50,000 homes destroyed in California in the last decade. We've seen 200 people die in wildfires. And we have to stop this cycle. And the biggest and best first step we can make is getting everybody in the wildland urban interface in California to create a completely non-combustible zone zero within 5 feet of their house. There's some simple things I'll just add real quick that, you know, garbage cans. So we all have plastic garbage and recycling containers now, and people put them underneath the eaves of their house. It protects them from rain. You put it on behind the side gate on your house. The gate is another problem. But those containers, they're made of plastics. They're full of empty Amazon boxes. They are combustible. Embers get into those boxes. They ignite and burn and can burn your house down. So that's another example of something that's combustible that should never be within 5 feet of your home. And I'm terribly sorry if you don't have another place to put them. You need to start thinking about where you can move those garbage and recycling containers away from your home. And probably that the last and biggest step in Zone Zero are fences and gates. Mm-hmm. Wood fences tend to carry fire from the outside edges of the property right up to the house. And most fences, that wicks the fire right up to the house. Those fences are attached to the house with a gate oftentimes. The fire will travel along that fence, ignite the gate, and eventually ignite the house. So one of the easy things to do there, relatively easy, is replace your gate or the first 5 feet of fence along the side of your house with a non-combustible fencing material. That might be corrugated steel, iron. There are lots of different options out there. Aesthetically, we know it requires making some changes from wood, but it's worth the effort.
What about homeowners in urban areas? Should they also aim for Zone Zero?
Yes, absolutely. We've now seen places like Coffee Park in Santa Rosa, which was not considered a wildland urban interface neighborhood. It was more than a mile from the nearest wildland urban interface and across a 8-lane freeway. And almost 2,000 homes burned there and several people died in that neighborhood. Had they built their homes to the standard that we discussed earlier, if they had maintained a combustible-free Zone Zero, many of those homes would have survived, and it's possible people would have survived. Mm-hmm. They didn't know that. I don't want this to come across as a criticism of people who live there. They simply didn't know it, and we weren't telling them to do this, but now's the time. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, there are lots of urban places that haven't thought a lot about wildfires in California that could be impacted by wildfires that become urban conflagrations, and they may not have thought about it, and this is a pretty easy step to take.
Yeah.
I watched a fire outside of Pacific Palisades on the news several years ago and thought, this neighborhood, they got lucky at the time in one sense, but they had excellent fire suppression. Los Angeles City Fire Department's one of the best in the world. We don't argue that. And they were able to stop a significant fire. This is about 5 years ago, just outside of Pacific Palisades, but under the right conditions, now we've seen what happens. That community was absolutely vulnerable, and we all need to wake up. I roll my eyes sometimes when we all say this was a wake-up call, because my argument is the wake-up call could have been the 1923 fires that burned significant portions of the state of California and thousands of homes, 1964, the Hanley fire and the North Bay fires, 1970 Berkeley burned, 1991 Berkeley burned again. Some of these places have burned multiple times, including significant fires in Los Angeles City and in areas close to the Pacific Palisades. So this shouldn't have been the wake-up calls. All the other ones in the past should have been our wake-up calls, but if this is what it takes to get people to take action and accept responsibility, make the changes that'll make us all safer, then so be it.
So in your opinion, could a Pacific Palisades-type firestorm happen here in the Bay Area?
Yeah. Well, first, the worst-case scenario has happened here repeatedly in the Bay Area. In fact, with more frequency and more times and more devastation in the Bay Area than what you just saw in Southern California. 1923, there were several fires that burned. On September 17th, the city of Berkeley burned. Sonoma County burned, including the same area that burned in 2017, and Marin County burned. These were hugely destructive fires, thousands of structures lost in the 1920s. That repeated in the 1960s, 70s, and 1991, the Oakland Hills fire. The Los Altos burned in the 1960s with a significant loss of structures. Those places that have seen those fires before are going to see fires again. That's just science, and we understand why. The why really revolves around local climate, the weather patterns that we see, especially these dry northeast winds that we get, the Santa Anas in Southern California, the Diablo winds in Northern California, but also the topography. The location of these valleys has not changed in the last 100,000 years. The valleys channel the wind. Those places where those winds are in alignment with canyons that funnel and accelerate those winds and drive them up slope, where those places also coincide with the type of fuels that are conducive to wildfire, vegetation, and now homes, we're going to see fires repeat there. We've seen it. The 2017, the North Bay fires was a classic example. And I'll always go back to the Oakland Hills fire. It was, 3,600 homes burned. 28 people died during that fire. It happened right in our backyard, and it's going to happen again. That piece of ground has burned several times now, at least three times in the last century, from very similar wildfires, and it's going to happen again. Arinda Moraga is, just on the other side of the tunnel from where the 1991 Oakland Hills fire started, is subject to those winds and has seen a significant increase in development in the last 30 years, including some big properties, big high-value properties, and I absolutely believe that they're one of the communities to watch. There will be a significant fire, and I'm pleased that the fire district there has taken such an active approach, much like what we're doing in Marin, to make efforts to reduce risk in the community.
Are you at all optimistic that when, not if, but when there's a major wildfire in the Bay Area, the damage will at least be less severe because more people are taking these steps to prepare?
Yes, absolutely. We've seen change in the last 5 years that will reduce the amount of damage that will happen. That said, I still fear that a significant, devastating wildfire could happen right here in Marin County. We're making the biggest investment in the state with our Marin Wildfire Prevention Authority, our tax measure that was passed in 2020. So we're investing about $20 million a year into wildfire mitigation and preparedness. It's not enough we certainly can't eliminate wildfires from the ground here. There will be less damage during the next fire because of the work we've done. We may prevent the next fire from starting, and we'll never know that. But it's still likely that under the wrong conditions, when those winds are blowing out of the northeast, that we will see a wildfire in Marin that will be destructive. My hope is that there won't be a loss of life because people have paid attention to the preparedness message we've given them, that our evacuation systems will be in better order, and we continue to learn from the challenges that other communities have faced in California, Los Angeles, the most recent. We adapt to what we learn from each of these new fires. So if there's no loss of life, or if the loss of life or injuries are minimized, we will feel that we've made a difference. Ultimately, of course, our goal is that there is no loss of life and no property damage, but I do think that that's unrealistic. We're likely to see another significant fire. When I say that, I fear that people will take that as a message that there's just nothing I can do. That's not true at all. You can do the work to prepare your home. You absolutely can do the work to ensure that your family survives a wildfire. And we have all the resources available to teach people how to do it, but it's not something that the government can do for you. It requires significant action and investment by each property owner.
Our thanks to Battalion Chief Todd Lando. The website for more information about all this, firesafemarin.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Matt Bigler, KCBS.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.